This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, observing the standoff in the Black Sea Basin between the Russian deployment of what we're told are more than 100,000 troops, along with armor and other sophisticated elements of warfare fighting, and the significant but much surrounded Ukrainian forces backed up by NATO. And we turn to NATO's point of view here. All along the Russian frontier, at least since 2014, there have been alarms ringing from the Baltic states, which I remind you are surrounded by Russia, Belarus and Russia on one side, and Kaliningrad, the exclave, on the other, a well-armed exclave, and Poland, certainly. The question of Ukraine is right in front of us. But the Russians have been active in Syria. The Russians are active in Central Asia. The Russians are active all along their borders. So what is NATO's goal here in saying its support for Ukraine is the word I've seen twice now, both by the President of the United States, unwavering, and the National Security Advisor, Mr. Sullivan, unwavering. Professor, what is NATO's best plan here, best outcome for NATO?
Well, let me first say what I think NATO should do, which what I hope they would do, which is that the American president, who I would hope would be a towering figure of great international credibility, will step into this situation and say, I see a danger of war. It's completely unnecessary. And as the leader of this big third piece of the world, I and my allies are going to propose to Ukraine and Russia that we all get together and we really settle this for once and for all. And we will not tolerate any use of force or coercion. But I invite you, let us all reason together. And if this, I mean, it would almost be to, I don't want to poison it, but be a sort of a Wilsonian position, because if the United States doesn't lead Ukraine and Russia and Eurasia out of this possible contretemps, then there is real danger that it could slip into what you have already mentioned, namely a gradual or perhaps rather rapid escalation of violence in a way that surprises everybody. What I see happening is nothing at all like what I've just said. I hear contradictory statements particularly coming from Washington, because NATO isn't going to act without Washington. But I don't know what Mr. Blinken means when he says we have an ironclad commitment to Ukraine. And then other people are saying, well, we can't really fight, but why don't we send weapons and advisors over there? Well, what exactly is it that we're going to do? Is the United States planning to punt on Ukraine and let the Russians have their way and then regret it? Or is the United States planning to make a point of this and use it as a stepping stone toward a more stable and peaceful international order?
The U.S. right now is politically compromised. The divisions are deep and longstanding and ferocious. And therefore, the U.S. is not at this point moving with the same momentum it did during the Cold War. Is that a significant factor for NATO, given that there's a new German government? Boris Johnson is always controversial. And Macron is running for re-election. Does that signify that the U.S. is not the strong hand that it once was?
Yes, I think that this is perhaps right now we're seeing America with the weakest hand in my very long lifetime or in yours.
And
I can't think of a weaker or administration, and I can't think of one that was more divided about what it was going to do and set more conflicting signals.
And that is true in Britain. That is true in France. That is certainly true in Germany. Germany just elected a man who is pleased to talk about socialism and climate change. There are no frontline soldiers in Europe. In the United States, in making these statements, they seem diplomatically astute. But is that something the Kremlin listens to?
I think that we are persuading the Kremlin, and we've been doing it now for at least a year, that we're all show and no go, that we're full of confusing talk and confused talk, that we don't really dare do much of anything. Not that I think it's always a good idea to do something, but above all, that in a way we're inscrutable, and that there's a chance that if you come at us the right way, you might really be able to pick our pocket. You might really be able to get a huge deal just because the United States hasn't figured out what it's doing or doesn't want to do what it thinks it should do. But I don't think, are there meetings going on now in Washington or among our allies or about any of this? Nothing. Are there contingency plans? Nothing. And our president is certainly not going to sort of bestride the world like Colossus in this case and sort of pull the warring parties apart and impose a just peace. So I think that we have very little clout with Mr. Putin, and even with our allies, we have very, very little clout, and it is diminishing.
Nord Stream 2, the administration acknowledges that Nord Stream 2 is important and it wants it to go forward. Congress does not, by the way, with reporting that there are some strong voices in Congress who argue that Nord Stream 2 is not appropriate and don't want it to go forward. Germany.
Well, it's been stopped. It's been stopped for now.
Right, by a German regulator. However, what we have here is the irony, the peculiar irony, that Western Europe is depending upon Russian natural gas, while at the same time NATO is confronting Russia as if it was a war fighter. Can this be resolved, Professor?
Well, I think that all of these things can be resolved. Remember that nearly every war in history, if you study it, could have been avoided had everybody on all sides really understood what was going to happen. The problem is that we haven't got an integrated view in which we have put together the economic piece of interdependence or the dependence of Europe on Russia for resources, and at the same time this Russian sort of Soviet irredentism, or whatever you want to call it, this feeling, the feeling that Mr. Putin has is that somehow Russia has been diminished, and that if he can only do something dramatic, he'll get the United States to stand up and salute, and he'll get everybody sort of back in order, being more deferential to him and to his wishes. And this is not simply a problem with him. It's also a problem with the way that we have dealt with Russia since the end of communism. So it's not entirely Putin. But if I believe that there's no need for any blood to be shed here, I think that this could be worked out by good diplomats and politicians, but they will all have to be have a long view of their national interests and not short-term, as Mr. Putin does, sort of political. He's very concerned with his own political survival and legacy.
Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, commenting on what we know so far about the confrontation in the Black Sea Basin, the three points of view, Moscow, Kiev, and Brussels, subset Washington. This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.